This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Florida is second only to California for its strawberry production, and during the winter months, most of the nation's strawberries are grown here in the Sunshine State. Later this hour, we're marking National Strawberry Day with the head of the University of Florida IFAS's Strawberry Breeding Program to learn about the history of strawberry breeding and the role strawberries play in the state's agriculture industry. But first, while Florida voters approved Amendment 2 a couple years ago, it still seems like there are more questions than answers about how medical cannabis will be handled in the state. Some local jurisdictions, like the city of Bonita Springs, have enacted temporary bans on medical marijuana dispensaries despite the amendment's passage. We're joined today by, for the first part of the show, by a husband and wife who have recently launched a new magazine that seeks to clarify the issues surrounding medical cannabis. Brian Kalando is publisher, and Lisa Kalando is editor-in-chief of that magazine called Revive. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And if you'd like to join our conversation about the world of medical cannabis, the number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. So, broad question. How did you two wind up publishing this magazine?
All right. Well, it started several years ago. Brian and I, prior to doing this, were doing a magazine here in Southwest Florida that was focused on music and local business. And as we were doing this magazine, after a while, Brian was getting sicker and sicker. And finally, it was determined that he had Crohn's disease, which led us down a whole new path that we never expected.
It was after the diagnosis came through. It's one thing, but then after about the 17th surgery, and all of the different medications, Remicade, the whole flurry of different things that the medical community was trying, I was basically told that, you know, you might want to get your affairs in order. There's nothing else we can do for you as a hospital system here in South Florida. And obviously that wasn't in my 5-year plan nor Lisa's. So we decided that we were going to sell the magazine that we had at the time and sell our condo in Naples and, in essence, travel across the country to Colorado and seek out what it was about cannabis that seemed to be helping. And within probably a week of being in Denver, I got my medical card, went to a dispensary. They walked me through for probably an hour and a half, told me everything I needed to know, and put me on an edible regimen of cannabis. And with those edibles, I started within probably 4 or 5 days starting to feel myself again. I was literally putting back on weight, and I was starting to get my old sense of self back.
So using or consuming cannabis alleviated your symptoms of Crohn's disease, or how can you characterize the difference it made to what was presenting itself as symptoms?
It turns out that there are different ways, obviously, you can consume cannabis. When I was doing the edible treatment form, it's actually being processed through my liver and through the actual stomach in itself, which is where it was in the gut is where the problem was. Mm-hmm. And that went through and it did start to alleviate. Didn't cure the Crohn's by any means. It's always going to be there. But what it gave me back was that quality of life that I was missing and actually took away, alleviated the overall daily strife of having something like this.
So what then made you decide to move back to Southwest Florida and launch this magazine?
It was after we'd been in Denver for about 3.5 years. We're obviously pretty well embroiled in the cannabis community in Denver, and we're learning. We're sponges for information. And when Amendment 2 passed, we said, you know, this is a time, obviously, when we were in Denver, our family and our friends are all here in Naples. In essence, what I could have been listed as is an American medical refugee at the time because I couldn't get the cannabis treatment in the state of Florida, so I had to go elsewhere. And without the possibility of having it, I was, in essence, barred from coming back due to my own health. It was a decision. Amendment 2 passed with the knowledge that we have now. We decided to come back and really drive home the point that this is what 71% of the people voted for, and let's educate, and that's our basis. Lisa was an English teacher in Collier County for many years, so we went back to our roots of publishing and educating.
How has the process of launching the magazine gone in terms of, like, receptiveness of advertisers? Because I know that's a big part of how magazines operate. How has that aspect of it worked?
Well, we knew when we came back, and again, we've been in the publishing business before, we knew advertising was going to be scarce at first. People didn't know if it was going to be a High Times type of a publication or if it was going to end up being more of a Gulf Shore Life type of a publication. So we were very careful in our branding, and we wanted to present it in an educational, clear, concise format. But we couldn't convey that to advertisers in the beginning. You can tell them all you want what it's going to look like, but until you have product in hand. So the first issue was self-funded.
Okay.
And now we're starting to see a lot of businesses going, wow, you know what? We're really behind you in what you're doing. And even if a business at first they may say, oh, we don't want to necessarily advertise in there. It's cannabis. But then they realize, you know what, 71% of the people in Florida voted for this, and all they have to do is put, we support Amendment 2 on that ad, and it just says, you know what, we're behind the rest of you. We want you to feel better as well.
You know, so I've read through the magazine, and it gives you all kinds of different angles on this issue. It's really kind of a great overview. It does give a lot of history, though. Can you guys kind of summarize for our listeners the history, you know? Let's not go to the deep history yet, because there is some interesting information in there about how things, you know, surprising things about, you know, semi-legal marijuana in Florida, I guess you can say.
But quasi-legal.
But the passage of the 2004 law, Charlotte's Web, let's start with that and then kind of try to work our way up to where we are now in terms of the laws that have been passed, the amendments that have been passed, and how they've been implemented here in Florida.
Well, as everyone knows, it's not been an easy task, you know, going through this, and it did start if you read in the magazine, we have a wonderful article by an advocate here in Florida, Gary Stein, and he explains that in the beginning it was actually himself and a few of these other people, Kathy Jordan, who has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and she went to the Capitol and she begged them, please, this is the only thing that's going to save my life. And things went on and it wasn't so good. And then all of a sudden, John Morgan entered the picture, mm-hmm. and Charlotte Fiji. And Charlotte Fiji was a little girl with Dravet syndrome. And the seizures. She would have tons and tons of seizures. So there was a strain that was developed out west, and it was called Charlotte's Web, named after her. And it was originally called Stoner's Disappointment because it didn't have very much THC, so it wouldn't get anyone high. But lo and behold, they found that the CBD content in it was high and could help her. So with the introduction of this and John Morgan, we finally came – the first time it came around, we thought it was, oh, 50% and we win. That's where everyone learned how amendments work in Florida.
Right.
That was a rude awakening for many. And so when it did go on the ballot the second time for Amendment 2, it did pass with the whopping 71.3% throughout the state of Florida.
We have a call on the line, actually. Kevin in Venice. Let me move my phone closer to me. Kevin, are you there? Can you give us your question or your comment?
Yes, I also suffer from Crohn's disease. I've had it since 1989.
Okay.
Ran the whole gambit with all the medications, got extremely ill from the medications, and altered my diet and started doing supplements, and I've been in remission for over 4 years.
Hey, that's fantastic to hear. That's wonderful. And I know that those same ones, I know that, you know, Remicade, which they had me on, it almost killed me. So I'm not a big fan of those medications.
Kevin, has medical...
Oh, definitely.
Kevin, has medical cannabis been part of what you're doing?
No, it has not, unfortunately, because I hold a Class A CDL with a hazmat and a tanker endorsement. I cannot do it.
Gotcha.
Gotcha on that.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care,
Kevin.
You too.
My call. I'm talking with the editor-in-chief and the publisher of Revive Magazine. That's Brian Kalando and Lisa Kalando on today's show. If you'd like to join our discussion like Kevin just did, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can post a question to Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. You alluded to CBD versus THC. Can you kind of illuminate that for people who might not understand what that distinction is?
Absolutely. All right. So when you have the cannabis plant, there are hundreds of different what we call cannabinoids. And the two most prominent and most understudied yet understudied, overstudied and understudied are THC and CBD. THC is the psychoactive component of the cannabis plant. So that is what makes people feel, quote unquote, high, loopy, stoned. CBD, on the other hand, is also a cannabinoid within the plant, but it does not have that psychoactive effect. So people can use it and they will not test positive for THC, and they can still receive a lot of health benefits through using that as well. When it comes to medical cannabis in Florida and CBD, CBD is legal in about 44 states right now. There are a few states that are having a very, very difficult time with it, which is a shame. But it is available here in Florida, and you do not need a medical card. It can be purchased in most organic
food stores.
What form
does it come in? Like when you if a person wanted to find it, what are they looking for?
Sure. CBD comes in a number of different forms. The most popular is what we call a tincture. And a tincture is simply a liquid that's either in alcohol or in oil. Most of the time you'll find them in oil. There are two different types of CBD that you can get within the tincture. As well as other forms. You have what's called full spectrum. So that'll have the CBD plus all of sorts of other cannabinoids of those hundreds that I was mentioning earlier. So it has all of those components in it, and we call that full spectrum. It's all the different types of stuff. Then you'll have an isolate version, which is strictly the CBD. There's nothing else.
Just the one cannabinoid.
Just the one cannabinoid. That's it. So there are those two options. But most people will end up taking a tincture. You'll take a dropper. You put the little dropper under your tongue. You let it sit there for about 30 to 60 seconds, so it's sublingual. And then you go ahead and swallow it down. This allows for a little bit of a faster absorption rate as opposed to taking a capsule, which is also available. A lot of places, too, will offer a CBD vape cartridge. So those who enjoy vaping or would like to vape it, it's a nice way to take small amounts throughout the day.
So let's talk about how a person in Florida now under the current laws would go about getting access to medical cannabis. What are the steps that they have to go through in order to wind up with the card that they need, et cetera?
Okay. First of all, you need to have one of the qualifying conditions. They are listed on the Department of Health website. A few of them, cancer, HIV, AIDS, Crohn's, epilepsy, terminal illnesses, which do need two doctors, seizure disorders. There's an exact list of them. However, there is that little caveat there at the end that says, or other types of illnesses similar to, meaning if you have fibromyalgia, it may not be listed, but the chances of you're getting a medical card are very high.
Gotcha.
So when you go, you need to select a doctor, a recommending doctor. And it's important to say that cannabis cannot be prescribed. Because of its federal status as being a Schedule I drug, it cannot be prescribed. If it were to, it could be. Because of this, it can only be a recommendation. So you need a recommending doctor.
Do all doctors have the ability to recommend, or do doctors have to go through some special accreditation to be able to be a recommending doctor?
They do have to go through a two-hour course and get their license through the state of Florida. Currently, we have about 12 to 1,300 throughout the state of Florida, and there's roughly – I think it's in the low 40s in the Lee and Collier areas. However, not all of them are practicing.
So once you have your card, then you go to a dispensary?
Right. So when you go to the doctor, you'll have to show proof of what the ailment is. And it needs to be something recent. If you were diagnosed with something 15 years ago and you've kind of let it go, you'll need to have a more current diagnosis.
From a separate doctor.
From a separate doctor, exactly. So then you take your documentation to the recommending doctor. You also need a passport photo and a $75 check to the state. And then within about 30 days, give or take, and they are back on schedule. It was a little longer for a while there. But you should get a card in the mail. You will also receive an email that says that you are on the registry at that time. And then you can select a dispensary.
Now, can you flesh out what delivery methods are legal, because I know you can't – they're not selling – like in some states, you know, they're selling, you know, flowers.
The flowers.
And, yeah. But
right
what's here legal?
Right now, the edible form is still not legal per se, but there are products that people are using to make edibles. The flower form is currently not available.
Right. So the flower form is not available. There are that's what John Morgan's been pushing for in his latest lawsuit, is the right to smoke. So you can't get the plant matter unless it's in a dry vaporizer form. And there are two dispensaries currently that are doing it. They're tamper proof. Aside from that, you have the vape option, a vape pen. You can have tinctures, which are sublingual under the tongue. You can have capsules.
And these are THC containing products?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And the dispensaries do offer THC mixed with the CBD. And it's important to note that we'll talk about ratios in the industry or in medical cannabis. And you'll say, oh, I'm on a 1-to-1. That means it's one part THC to one part CBD, which is fantastic if it's someone who has very debilitating pain but still needs to function as a human being because they have a job and a life and a family. So it's a wonderful way because that CBD tends to knock down some of those psychoactive effects. So it makes them so they're not quite as, well, high during the day. So that's something that's offered. So there's 1-to-1s. There's sativa and indica, which are the different types. So they do have a pretty decent selection. They do have topicals as well. And I think even one of the dispensaries is now coming out with suppositories.
Which was the ongoing joke originally that Florida finally gets it and it's going to be a suppository.
Can you explain what's going on in places like Bonita Springs where they're passing these temporary bans? It seems to me that there are municipalities kind of being given a choice. It's sort of an all or nothing kind of thing, either ban it or not regulate it at all. Or do you have a handle on what that is?
You know, it's a tough situation right now. I was at the Bonita Springs Council meeting yesterday morning and spoke on behalf of the patients in our area. The problem that we have found is over the past year and since everything's been implemented, our local municipalities have really wanted state guidance, and the state has not given them that guidance. So now it's kind of left into their own hands. And it's really frustrating because they don't necessarily know exactly how to go about implementing this. You know, you read stories about Colorado where there's so many dispensaries and automatically people are assuming, oh no, we're going to have dispensaries on every single corner and it's going to do terrible things. And that's really not the case. We have a certain number of licenses. Each of those license holders can only have 25 brick and mortars. So the chances of like Trulieve, who has 13 throughout the state, wanting to put 12 of them in Bonita Springs proper, it's slim to nil. So they're being very strategic as well, the license holders. So I can see where they're having a struggle. Nobody – it's tough to implement when they didn't have the guidance. But now they're forced to take a look at it and they're saying, okay, look, what are our possibilities? What are our options to do this? And how do we stop it from infiltrating? And the beautiful answer is that's not going to happen. It just by the way that our system is set up here in Florida being vertical and being so restrictive, we're not going to be like Denver where there's 1,000 dispensaries within the city proper.
Do you – I mean, can you characterize because this is not – Florida's not the first state that's done this, so there's other states who have different models. So how different is Florida's model versus other states, or are there other states that are handling it like we are?
It's actually very different. I know that New York State also has what's called a vertical model, which basically is it's not a free capital type of market. It's not a free market. There are only a certain number of dispensaries or grow licenses that are allowed. And then once it gets to a certain number of patients who are cardholders, then it goes up again. Whereas in other places, if Mike, you and I decided that the three of us wanted to start a dispensary and we had the funds to do it, we'll go apply, we'll do our thing, we'll make sure we have a good lawyer and a good tax guy, and we can make that happen. In the state of Florida, the chances of something like that happening are slim to nil for quite some time.
What about the on the growing end of things? How much can you explain in terms of the farms, I guess, that are growing it, or the greenhouses, or who's making the product in Florida is the question.
We do have 13 or 14 license holders right now. Several of them are producing. Others are still in the beginning stages. We have probably the most well-known is Trulieve. They're out of Quincy up by Tallahassee. There's Curaleaf, which is out of Miami-Dade. You have Sutera. You have Afria. You have Knox. And I think there's another one. The other one that's coming very soon is going to be Three Boys Farm, and they'll be the first and only organic cannabis grower in the state of Florida. But basically, because the way it's set up, you have – It's they handle everything from seed to sale. They plant the seed, they grow it, they cultivate it, they harvest it, they cure it, they extract it, they then bottle it, they label it, they sell it. You know, so they're doing everything. Whereas in Colorado, a dispensary is going to have multiple plates. They're going to have a label guy, and they're going to have a company that they may outsource this to. So it's a little bit different. It's very restrictive, and they have to do everything from soup to nuts, which is not an easy task.
Sounds like it's giving a lot of control to a small number of people.
And that's the issue.
That is the issue.
We're talking about medical cannabis on this part of today's show. My guests are Brian Colando and Lisa Colando, publisher and editor-in-chief of Revive Magazine. It's a new local publication covering the world of medical marijuana. If you'd like to join our discussion, we have a few minutes left during this segment. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can comment or ask a question on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. Brian, I want to talk a bit about a piece that you wrote in this first issue. It's in the Health and Wellness Paradigm Shift is what it's called. And as I read through it, I kept expecting you to kind of pivot to the medical marijuana side of things, but it was more just a piece about being a mindful patient. I mean, can you just kind of reflect on that? Because this magazine is more than just information about medical cannabis. It's more holistic than that, I guess you
could
say.
It's overall health and wellness. And I think that the paradigm shift is something that Lisa and I had been talking about when we were doing the basis for the magazine. And it's all about taking control of your own health on a daily basis. It's not just, okay, so with my Crohn's instance, yes, it was medical cannabis that helped me tremendously. But it was also being mindful about asking my doctor why they're switching my prescription. Why are you putting me on this new drug regimen when the other ones seem to be working? Is it because you have a new timeshare in Bora Bora that you got for the week? Or what is it that you're doing this for? And really taking account to pay attention to your body, pay attention to what others are telling you, and to take control of your own health. It's the only body you have. Don't let your doctor kind of shame you into doing what they think is right. And sometimes say, no, I don't agree with what you're doing. And don't be afraid to ask your doctor why, or I want another opinion. Or take that further parking spot out and walk an extra few ways. I think the whole thing started when you see people going to the gym and they're driving around trying to find the closest spot possible to go walk on a treadmill.
I used to have a professor that said he wasn't from the United States, and he said it was very interesting that people would take the elevator all day long, but then when they go to the gym, they walk on stairs.
I know, exactly. So it's a paradigm shift in the way, not only for your health, it's a paradigm shift of people they're getting tired of 17, 18 different pills a day. We know, especially our demographic, tends to be older, and they're looking for some relief. And they don't want to get up and take – there's a great quote, and I can't remember the whole thing now, but it's you take one drug to alleviate the symptoms of another drug, so you're taking this other one to get rid of that, then the Paxil to get rid of this and that. It's saying that maybe if you can cut half of those out of your daily routine, you're going to feel that much better.
We've got another call on the line. This is Fabi on Marco Island. Fabi, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my question is, every time I hear on the radio or on TV about the opioid epidemic, none of the remedies ever include CBD. And it's just mind-boggling. I can't understand. We have a cure to opioids, the opioid epidemic, but no one is addressing it. What is it just me that's having this realization?
No. I think that's an overall general consensus of why when – you know, the Middletown, Ohio, I believe, right now has their morgue's over, it's overflowing, and they're running, and they're not going to be able to afford to pay their fire department because they go through so much Narcan. And they're not saying, because municipalities maybe don't want to say that this is an answer to it, because let's face it, a lot of people, big pharmaceuticals pay a lot of money to make sure their products are out there.
And for those listeners out there, with the opioids, the reason, and people say, oh, you're going to substitute one drug for another. What ends up happening is it's a physiological problem. When you're given a prescription for opioids, your body needs more, craves more, has to have more to keep sustaining that same feeling. What cannabis does, both CBD and THC in combination or even alone, it helps to stop those receptors, those opioid receptors, from craving quite that much. So if you have someone that gets sustains a terrible injury, and let's say that they're given Vicodin for it, if they're supplementing with medical cannabis, chances are they can go down to the very minimum of that Vicodin if they even need it at all. So it's pretty amazing when you start to look at it. But I think a lot of people, it's a shame, because the numbers, the statistics, the people are out there that say, if it weren't for cannabis, I'd be dead.
Is there research on that that can back that up? I mean, you know, it's one thing, you know, we know there's an opioid problem, that's for sure. And I know there is more and more research being done on the medical benefits of marijuana, but how much of that has been sort of codified in science, and how much of that at this point is more anecdotal?
And
I was just going to say, I think it's our, and back me if I'm not correct on this, Lisa, but it's our country, I think, isn't really, just because we just found out about our endocannabinoid system in the late 90s.
And that's a system within our body.
Everyone is born within these cannabinoids in their body. It's actually produced in mother's breast milk,
right,
of all things, too. And so now you're coming to the point where we're so far behind on this as a general learning curve, but where all the research is coming out of Israel at this moment, and that's where groundbreaking research is happening, where Israel is actually – the country itself is funding this research.
And that's an interesting point too, is that I think a lot of the research is anecdotal. You have, you know Uncle Jeremy, who went through and he got off opioids, and there's no research. You have – Jeremy's still here. He's living. He's doing great. But there's not a lot of research. And that's because it's been denied for so long. It's been a Schedule I, classified as a Schedule I drug, which has inhibited the ability to be able to do the amount of research that we need. There's a show on Viceland called Weedicket, and they did show a place in Maine. And it was very backwoods looking and everything. They were helping people get off heroin, get off opioids by the use of cannabis. The success rate for someone who goes into an opioid program for recovery is 6%. Only 6% of those people will come out of it and not touch it again. With cannabis, even in this not very sterile-looking environment and everything, there was a 50% success rate. And at first you say, oh, 50%, that's like flipping a coin. It's still a lot higher than 6%.
We have a question that came in online from Joe in Cape Coral. He's asking how the fees of doctors who prescribe cannabis are regulated. His wife has a medical marijuana card, but a doctor checkup can cost her $350. And then there's fees associated with renewing the card. So who is there a regulatory body who is keeping an eye on these doctors?
Unfortunately, there's not. I mean, it really is a case of buyer beware. And in the case of a newer industry like this, it's very difficult. You're going to have people coming out of the woodwork and doing some shady things. And it's unfortunate because they're preying on the people who are sick and ill to begin with, you know.
Basically, we call it green greed.
It's terrible. Basically, when you go to get a medical card, you should be paying somewhere between the realm of, let's say, $159 to maybe $225 roughly. And that's not including the fee to the state. There are some doctors that want to charge monthly prices and things. So you really do have to do your research and see who these doctors are. And believe it or not, social media is a great place to start looking at a it, it what other people have said about the doctors really, really helps. So and we're always available too, that if anyone ever wants to discuss, hey, how do I find the right doctor, they're always more than welcome to contact us at the magazine too.
You have another section in the magazine called Cannabis Conversations. And at first I didn't really understand what I was looking at, but the one is talking to kids. Like if you have a child, how do you talk to this about them in a rational way? But then the other one is talking to parents, meaning people talking to their older parents about it. It's really kind of interesting because the older generation grew up in a world of reefer madness, and suddenly they're now, starting to ask their, 40-year-old son, can you flesh that out a little bit?
It's interesting. We always say that eventually the parents become the children, the children become the parents, and that's kind of the premise of that article is, they clothed us and bathed us and fed us and made sure that we did all right, and they wanted the best for us and wanted us to feel good. And as they're getting older, we want the same for them. As a former English teacher, it was easy for me to teach freshmen. I could teach them Animal Farm and Of Mice and Men in 1984 all day long. And you know what? They were fresh, clean slates. There was nothing there to – they didn't have the life experience. When you teach an adult, you have to first have them unlearn everything that they learned with the reefer madness, the propaganda and all of that. And then they have to then start with a cleaner slate, and then you can teach them. But it's getting to the point now where, we know that 2.5 milligrams of THC a day can stave off Alzheimer's. We know that it can help with Parkinson's tremors. When you start looking at these things, and these are our older demographic who are suffering from these ailments, and relief is there. They can get relief. But it's a matter of how do you talk mom and dad into this after they were the one that told you umpteenth years ago that you were going to get in big trouble if we ever found you with this stuff. So it's definitely, talk about paradigm shifts. That's a huge one right there.
What do you say to people who – and this is kind of a question that you have to ask, I guess – that say that the world of medical marijuana is simply a foot in the door for recreational marijuana? Do you have a thought about that or a position on that, or what is your position on recreational marijuana? Because it is now legal in what, 4, 5, 6 states, something
eight,
like
nine.
That?
Eight, nine. I think
and we also offer – if anyone is interested, we do educational seminars about 3 times a month. And we actually – Lisa does these, and we actually have a great pull quote from everyone knows him, but it's – is that Chong, right?
Yep, Tommy Chong.
Right.
Of Cheech and Chong, Up in Smoke. His thing says – and your question being what's the gateway to recreational, his quote is all cannabis is medicine. And so whether it's recreational use or it's medical use, you're still going to get those medical benefits of the same plant. It's just when you're looking at the recreational aspects, maybe it's going to be a better route because you don't have to spend the $225 or the person who wrote in $350 to get a card when you can go to a store and get it as long as the people there are knowledgeable.
And again, we see too, pardon me, in different states like Colorado, when you institute medical and then finally, recreational, we see the opioid, numbers go down by 25%. The overdose rate goes down by 25%. That's hard data. That's not anecdotal.
And there's some other countries who've, like I think Portugal is one where they've basically legalized everything, and the results have not been that the sky fell. It's there's positive outcomes.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And I mean, there's no doubt that eventually, yes, Florida will be recreational, the same as eight, nine of the other states, and each time there's more voting, we're seeing more and more states are inviting it. And you look to places like Colorado. When we were, we lived out there for the 3 years. Their graduation rate for high school is 72%. That's an issue. So when you're legalizing cannabis out there and you're taxing it, they're bringing in – they brought in $1 billion, of which there's a lot of tax money. And where are they putting it? They're putting it back into the places needed most, homeless problem and schools. And they're putting it into awareness programs about the hard drugs. So, I mean, the monies are going back to great places. And again, we're not seeing – even when we live there, it's funny. You think you're going to go out there and it's going to be like the Wild West and everyone's going to be smoking joints in the streets and it's going to be chaos and mayhem. And you know what? The people are – They're discreet. It's no different than, hey, honey, can you buy me a six-pack on the way home? Or, hey, honey, can you buy me an eighth on the way home?
Right.
It becomes normalized to the point where you don't have a bunch of stoners wandering around like zombies. It's not like that. These are people who work hard, and they're stockbrokers and doctors and lawyers and teachers and firemen, and they like to indulge once in a while to be able to blow off a little steam. And who are we to say that that shouldn't be their choice?
So we're basically out of time, but where can people find your magazine?
Well, currently we're distributed in over 60 locations. That distribution list is on our website at
It's www.getrevivemag.com, getrevivemag.com, or on our Facebook page. And those are about 60 locations throughout Lee and Collier County, Cape Coral, Bonita Springs, Naples. You can always check it out there.
We offer subscriptions as well if you can't seem to find a copy, because they go quick.
Is the second issue in the works?
It is.
It is.
Any idea on a drop day?
Drop date will be the end of March. It'll be the April issue. As we said, the first one was self-funded, so we gave ourselves an extra 2 weeks to get everything together for the second issue. But it'll be fantastic. As a sneak peek real quick, there'll be articles on Parkinson's and autism, and both of those are awareness month for that. We'll have some interesting articles about, you know, what the industry is doing here in the state, and a bunch of other stuff. So.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of today's show. I want to thank my guests, Brian Colando and Lisa Colando. They are publisher and editor-in-chief of Revive Magazine. Thanks to you both for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Coming up, we're marking National Strawberry Day with the head of the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Strawberry Breeding Program to see what goes into growing the perfect berry. I'm Mike Canary. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.